Well, sometimes when you get second place, you know, you feel pretty upset about it. When you get second place behind Kevin Van Dam, that's pretty good. And with me today is Mark Tucker. And, Mark, it was a close call at Gunnersville, but KVD got you.
He did, Terry, you know, and that's to be expected. I mean, it was a tournament to where the way it was setting up, he, you know, I knew he was going to excel over everybody else.
Well, you had, you know, of course, the first day, reminisce a little bit here. The first day, you go into the tournament, and it's called because of weather. And, you know, rightfully so. I think everybody, 99.9% of the population there that were fishing said, right call. That was a good call. But that does impact you into this tournament.
Oh, absolutely. It's still going to be a two-day tournament, but you're going to have one day cut short. So the quality of fish, I knew you was going to have to catch them good, you know, the first 2 days to even think about being there on the final day. And it helped me a lot canceling that day because it was the first day in probably a month and a half that I had time to really organize my tackle, get a lot of stuff out of my boat that I've been carrying around that I didn't need. And, I mean, I spent from 4 o'clock in the morning after they canceled the tournament till probably 7 o'clock that night just cleaning up the boat and organizing everything. And so I enjoyed that day of just fixing the office up.
Well, you know, Mark, Basscat, of course, is your sponsor of your boat. But the thing that I think that's important for people to know is, number one, you're a regional, very, very good regional angler. Fished Mark Twain, Lake of the Ozarks, those lakes, and did very, very well. And kind of a story about a guy that went out, was, you know, worked on concrete, you know, construction type guy, said, hey, I can do this, went out and proved yourself, and now you're fishing against the best in the world. Well, you go to Gunnersville, and you find one section that you really, really like, and you stayed there and really had a good tournament.
It worked out real well, Terry. It was, you know, the year before, I think I got second or sixth place at Gunnersville last year, and you know, everything was set up just about, the lake level was about the same height, the water temperature was the same. The only difference was the water had a little more color to it than it was the previous year. And last year, I'd fished the same areas, you know, the same place that I caught them this year. And the first couple of days of practice, you know, I didn't go there. I thought, well, I'll just, you know, I know what's there. I kind of knew how that area laid. So I ran around the rest of the river and the lake and fished some different stuff. And, you know, I caught quite a few fish everywhere I went. And I've seen a lot of fish on beds. But they really weren't, other than one pocket I found, they really weren't. I mean, the biggest one I seen was maybe 3.5 pounds. And there were several of them on beds. I was just, you know, I thought, man, I just don't want to get caught up in that bedding deal, really, because you couldn't see real well. The water was just off-colored enough to where it made it tough. And then when they canceled the first day, I was going to be the last boat out. I was like boat 107. So I knew where some good fish were on beds, but I figured, you know, being one of the last boats out, that I wouldn't get to them. I just decided that I was going to start where I caught them the year before. I figured I'm just going to go there, start fishing there, and then I can run my other deal. And, you know, I pulled up the first morning, dropped the trolling motor, and the first cast I made, I caught one almost 6 pounds.
Good start.
Yeah, it was. It kind of surprised me, you know. I was like, holy cow. And at one time, I thought it'd come off, but it was coming at me so fast. And I finally got it caught up to it and got it in, and I thought, oh, my goodness, that's a dandy, you know. So in the next 15 minutes, I caught 20 pounds. There was not another competitor boat or a local around me, and I thought, you know, 20 pounds would be a pretty good start, you know. So I pulled the trolling motor up and left. Looking back on it now, there's no telling what I could have caught that first day after I know what was there, you know. I didn't realize there'd be that many fish staying in a 100-yard stretch, but, you know, it worked out good. And I fished the rest of the lake. I mean, I ran to 4 or 5 other places, and, you know, but it's hard to catch 5-pounders to cull 4-pounders. So that was a kind of a dilemma I had, you know, the first day. And the second day, I go back, and now I'm, you know, like the second boat out, so I figured, man, I'm going to get over there and get to it. But the problem was, it was on a Saturday now. So there was a couple of, you know, quite a big local tournaments going on, and there was nobody really on the spot where I was fishing, but as I started catching them and started culling, more and more people started seeing me, and before you know it, I had probably 10 to 12 boats had me circled. And so that really hampered my second day as far as, you know, the angles of the cast you had to make, and you had to stay, you know, you had to stay on the edge of the deeper water, throwing, you know, trying to throw up into that, you know, anywhere from 3 to 4 feet of water, and just trying to bring the bait off the edge of the milfoil.
Well, let's talk about lay of the land a little bit. I mean, you're talking about a 100-yard stretch.
It was a flat, and I knew they'd spawn back there, but you couldn't see them. The water was too dirty. And the first day of the tournament, Terry, they started, the shad started spawning big time.
Mm-hmm.
And in the previous days of practice, they weren't really spawning that well. You know, the shad hadn't spawned. They were starting to, but you didn't see numbers of shad when you'd bring your bait in. When I'd bring my bait in, there'd be just a ball of, you know, anywhere from 20 to 50 shad with your bait. And so that occurred the first day. Well, the more I started keying on that, seemed like there were smaller shad spawning up there shallow. And it seemed like when I stayed next to the deeper water, I was snagging shad anywhere from 2 inches to 3 inches. They were bigger shad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'd been catching the more quality fish.
Mm-hmm.
Right where the flat come out and went from 3 to 6 feet of water. It was some deeper water up next to that millpool, and it was basically just a millpool ledge, you know, where it dropped off real good. Once I figured out that they was right on that little deeper edge, you know, you knew how to position the boat to make the cast, so you kept the bait in the strike zone the whole way back.
Well, you threw a spinnerbait, I know. You threw a chatterbait, and you might have had one other bait.
The horny toad.
Yeah, how about
that? The horny toad, the key to the horny toad was, first thing in the morning, if you could find some floating millfoil that was cut up by trolling motors and big engines running, there'd be patches, oh, I would say maybe 10 by 10 around. It'd just be a clump, and I mean, they were all just little bits and pieces, but for some weird reason, they were all, you know, it would be just like a rug of it floating on the water. Well, all those shad, and if that floating debris, that millfoil, was over somewhat of a ledge or a shoal, those bass would be there because the shad would be flipping up on that dead millfoil that was floating, and they were spawning on it. And, I mean, there'd be thousands of shad around that little ball of grass. And I mean, it was floating dead grass. It was the weirdest thing. And the wind would blow it around, and you just have to just follow that little floating mat around, and those bass would be up under that stuff, just gorging on those shad spawning in it. But you couldn't take the spinnerbait, and you couldn't take the chatterbait, because you'd get that grass on it the minute you'd come through it, because it was just old dead floating stuff. Well, you had to take that horny toad, throw it out past there, and just kind of pop it, and then once you've seen a little opening in it, I took a little cylinder weight and stuck in the nose of the horny toad so it'd sink a little bit. And once I pop it through there, it looked like them shad flipping, then I'd just kill it when I got around that grass, and just, you'd go to let it sink, kind of like a fluke, and all of a sudden one just take off with it.
Now, what color did you throw, Mark?
Just a white one.
So you had
a white horny toad.
White horny toad. You didn't doctor it up on the feet,
nope,
or anything?
I didn't do anything. Other than I took like a, it was probably, I don't know, it wasn't quite an eighth ounce, but it was close to a lead, a little, what we use in wacky worms, you know,
mm-hmm,
that little lead cylinder, and I just shoved it up in the nose so it would go down through that grass a little bit.
Almost like you do, and you're talking about a wacky worm, but it's almost like a nail. It's a,
exactly,
a weight
that's
exactly shaped
what,
like that.
Just a lead nail is all it was. Just enough to get the nose to go through that stuff, and it was quite the deal. I mean, they was really eating it, but the problem was it didn't seem like And I would catch four or five keepers first thing in the morning doing that, but they would only be 2.5 to 3 pounds. It didn't seem like the big ones was on, you know, they weren't up there that aggressive. They stayed out there in that deeper water. I'd been fishing a double willow leap, the Picasso spinnerbait, the tournament four spinnerbait, and in a white, it had a white spot and a little bit of silver mixed in. It was just, you know, it looked just like one of those shad. But it had a flat head on it, a fish-type head, and it would come through that grass good. The head would come right through that millpole. The problem I was having was you wouldn't, with the Colorado and a willow leaf blade, you'd get a little piece of grass on there, and you couldn't tell, you know, there wasn't enough vibration. So I ended up cutting those off and putting a number 5 silver Colorado blade on it so I could feel it thump. And I caught several nice ones on it the second day, slow rolling it out in that millpool. The third day I go back, and I couldn't get them to bite it. I don't know if I threw it so much the second day that they... But that's when I picked up the chatterbait, and it had a lot of the same vibration. The chatterbait and that number 5 Colorado blade on that spinnerbait felt a lot the same. The only difference was is when I'd get the chatterbait hung up in the grass, I mean, you could rip it out of there. And so I got a lot of good reaction bites on the chatterbait.
Well, you look back at this tournament, there's a lot of things that happened. Number one, you know, not probably a Mark Tucker year, but you've now turned that around. You had the second place finish there.
Right.
You fish for the, you know, now are in the majors, which is cool. That's $250,000
exactly.
To win one of those. And then on top of that, your Angler of the Year and or Bassmaster Classic position changed as well.
Exactly. And the next few tournaments, you know, we get to go to Grand. We get to fish a few more lakes right now where I can pick up the football jig and do some dock fishing and stuff to where, you know, it's a lot different when you come off those lakes. If you don't catch 100 pounds a day, you do well. You know, now when you catch 20 pounds, it means something. Those first 3 or 4 tournaments, I mean, you catch 20 pounds and it was just a ho-hum day. And they were good tournaments, and I should have did good at the rest of them. And I mean, I don't know, you know, you just... And it wasn't that I was fishing poorly or you know, it was just didn't have it going on, didn't get in that zone. And really, you really have to key in on little things, and that materializes into big things. And if you're catching fish and you think it seems to be easy, you're not doing your job, because it has to be a lot more specific than that.
Well, Mark, I appreciate you being with us here on the radio talking about all the great things that are coming down the pike. You know, you look now at your season as it's laid out in front of you. There's a lot of things that you've got to look forward to. Number one, you talk about the venues. That's the first thing. But a lot of money to be made yet, and you're just about, well, you know, just a little bit into the season. So you got a lot of events left.
I'm really trying to stay positive about it. You know, after there for a while, when you're sitting down there in 80th in the point standings, you're like, man, I got a hole to get out of big time. But and really, Terry, you really have to be in those top 5 positions when you're that low to make up any points to make some ground up. So hopefully, you know, it gets me on a roll to where, I mean, I'd love to win. You know, I'd love to win one of these next tournaments. But as long as I make it back to the Classic and stay in the majors to where I help my sponsors promote their products, that's what it's about as well. And it was just like this weekend, I just got back from Mountain Home for the Bass Cat Owners Invitational, where we had a 648 boat tournament, which was just awesome.
Well, no doubt about it. You know, Rick Pearson, those guys, just, I'm sure they're ready for a vacation. You are as well. And I appreciate you being with us here on the radio at Bass Fan Today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Terry.
Mark, have a great one. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.